nationally syndicated advice columnist Amy Alcon. Tu t'amuses? Tu comprends? Je ne comprends pas. Je ne comprends rien de ça.
Welcome to Science News You Can Use Radio. We have an exciting show for you tonight, digging into the science on why mean girls are so mean and how women can succeed in love, friendships, and careers. And here's a tip we'll be getting into later in the show. According to the science, this advice to lean in, as Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg advises, well, that's advice that can really backfire on you if you're a woman. So stay tuned. This is Amy Alcon, science-based syndicated advice columnist and author of Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck. My fabulous radio compadre, science compadre, is animal behaviorist Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. She's author of Wild Connection, What Animal Courtship and Mating Tell Us About Human Relationships. So we have a lot of great advice and some very unexpected insights for you tonight from the science of sex differences. But first, Dr. Jen has a sad story from the shark-infested waters of female friendship.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, it is a sad story. It was in middle school, and my best friend became friends with a new group of girls, you know, those popular girls. And I wanted to be a part of that group so bad. So when they invited me over to a party, I was super excited. I rode my bike all the way there. But then when I got to the house, I found out there was no party. And this is what was so horrible. It was a trick. It was a trick so that they could beat me up. They, including my former best friend. I somehow scrambled out of there. I rode my bike all the way back home, fighting back the tears. Tears that were really more about the betrayal I felt from my best friend than any kind of physical injury that I suffered. And that was how I came to know about mean girls.
Wow, that is so terrible. That is really terrible.
It is.
God, and I have to say, I knew a lot about them because I grew up with no friends. So, you know, it's a just, you know, really a horrible, there are horrible things that women and girls do to each other. But I do have to say, you know, it's odd that they physically attacked you. Now, I've been reading a lot lately in the science of sex differences and female competition. Some of the researchers are Ann Campbell and Joyce Benenson and Marianne Fisher, and they all find that physical fighting is really rare between women.
Well, I mean, that's true, unless, of course, you're a female tree swallow. And then it's kind of like Housewives of Atlanta, which, you know, they don't hold back on the punches, okay? And, you know, tree swallows also, they have knockdown, drag-out fights among the females. But you're right, you know, for many other social species, like chimpanzees and humans, direct physical aggression is not as common. In humans, there is some variation. Sarah Hardy revealed in her book, Mother Nature, A History of Mothers, Infants, and Natural Selection, that really women are incredibly aggressive beings, and we create dominance hierarchies, and we defend them fiercely, even if we don't sort of go to battle in the same way that men do. So there are some cultures where females can be pretty physically aggressive, but it's not universally the case.
Yeah, this is so interesting. And there's an evolutionary reason for this, for why women generally aren't going to duke it out physically. And this is actually, the female aggression is called covert expression. We'll talk more about that. But Joyce Benenson and Ann Campbell, they both trace this non-physical response, the not fighting physically, to how women are child bearers and child carers. And so we have this complicated, delicate reproductive system. And if you got injured physically, it could jeopardize your ability to have children or to survive, to protect the ones you already have. And, you know, it wasn't like ancestral daddy could have run up to the store for baby formula. So, you know, if the infant lost its mother, it was in deep trouble. You know, and so, you know, the other thing is that men are physically, they're hormonally and psychologically different from us. They're prepared to do battle in those ways. like with higher testosterone in a way women are not. So, and this isn't just human males, to get into your neighborhood a little bit. Kingsley Brown, he's a law professor, wrote a book called Co-ed Combat that's very F-psych based. And he points out that males across mammalian species, and I'll quote him, are larger, stronger, and more aggressive to members of their own species than females.
Yeah, and you're exactly right on pointing out the research that shows the trade-off there is if females are the primary caregivers, and this is also true for many other species, you can't really afford to get into a physical fight. And also, as Kingsley Brown points out, yes, males of among many species, not just mammalian species, are larger and stronger. But in other species, like Chifaka lemurs, which some of them, some people might recognize those from, what is it, The Lion King? It's the females that are a tad bit bigger than the male, and they like to throw their extra weight around. So they're not only physically aggressive with other females, but they even routinely beat up the males, especially when they want to get rid of an older one in favor of a newer, younger model. Okay.
Wow. This, so, I love that that happens in lemurs too. You know, it's just,
it does.
You know, and yeah, I actually have to brag. I have to brag about you for a second. One of the coolest things about Dr. Jen is that she's a lemur personality expert. I mean, how many of those are?
Not too many. I can count a few, you know, of us, but definitely a specialty, you know. But generally, it's true that females are not as physically strong as males, so they essentially need alternative ways to achieve successful results in conflicts.
And let's talk about what they're conflicting over, which is resources, status, and men who can provide protection and resources. And so, as I mentioned before, they fight these battles through what's called covert aggression. That's an anthropologist term. These are these attacks. They're just so horrible that, unlike the one on you, that horrible attack, these attacks, covert attacks, allow a woman plausible deniability. That's the attacker woman, that is. So these are attacks right. that are very hard to pinpoint as attacks. This is like stuff like gossip, and this is horrible, social exclusion, and then these mean bitch moves. I call it stabbing another woman in the self-worth, you know, while feigning innocence, you know, like, oh, you're so lucky your boobs are so small and you don't have to, you know, spend a lot of money on bras. You know, and so you know, this is really pernicious because it's so hard to identify and to fight. You almost don't feel like you have a right to fight back because, well, maybe she just, I don't know, was that really an attack? And, you know, it kind of makes you wish women could be a little more like men who can actually sometimes go out in the parking lot, suck each other a couple of times and go back in and have a beer.
Absolutely. And then you would know where you stand. I mean, and I think a lot of times many women, you know, when they look at how men have conflict and have fights and then can knock back a beer, they sort of scratch their heads at this and wonder how is it that they could just shake hands as if it never happened. And what happened was they settled it. And I think men sometimes, you know, look at women and scratch their heads about how often women just don't let it go already. But, you know, as you pointed out, the disparity in physical strength between men and women means that there is a higher cost and risk associated for females just to duke it out. And that's why it led females of many species, including humans, to develop these sort of covert aggression tactics so that they could essentially win.
Yeah, and there's another interesting difference. Women and men even group up in different ways. So men are these competitors and creatures of groups, very comfortable in groups. They go right to groups, even as little boys. And then Joyce Benenson actually says this makes human males unique compared to other species, how they like to fight and compete as a group. But the thing is, this is so interesting. They can compete with each other head on in the group, you know, and they're very comfortable with that, but then they'll band together against a common enemy. They don't have these pissy resentments of women. You know, I mean, if we were all attacked, there were a group of us and we were, you know, a bunch of bitchy women, I'm sure, you know, we would all, you know, band together, but it's just not a natural thing. Men are just much more easygoing and accepting of hierarchy and some guy being better than they are. And, you know, so they might not like being number two or number 10, but they accept it while women don't. And so women, just to get into female groupings, they are not creatures of groups. They tend to form dyads, which is groups of two. And this is really kind of crazy. They bond over shared vulnerabilities. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And perish forbid among women. You should do anything to stand up from the crowd. Hello, Mean Girls. Hello, punishment. You know, specifically that terrible social exclusion thing, which is actually a female specialty.
Yeah, it is a totally go-to strategy. And before I say more on that, I just want to point out that it's not just human males that can form these groups. A lot of males of other species will form bachelor herds. So this is very common in young elephants. It tends to be among the teenagers, you know. They're not quite fully developed yet, so they're not in the whole competitive mode. And also in lions, sometimes you'll have a coalition of anywhere from 2 to 4 males that will form and have a common enemy. That is the key. But for females, you're absolutely right. You know, social exclusion is a strategy, and it's not just human females. You can find the mark of social exclusion by females all over the animal kingdom. And you know, Amy, I know you like meerkats, those charismatic little carnivores from Meerkat Manor.
Love them.
Yeah, but let me tell you, they epitomize the mean girl approach.
Oh, I hate that. I love them because they're cute. They're so funny, but I guess I didn't notice them stealing like the weekly little meerkat girl's lunch money.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they may look cute, but they have covert aggression that involves working like voodoo on the hormones of other females. And then these females that are basically lower in status, they're excluded from all the cool shit, like reproduction and getting groomed and the best food, right? And so they get none of the good stuff. And the social exclusion is something that I'm always concerned about, probably because of that story I told our listeners at the beginning about being excluded from the group and, of course, beat up. And so I learned early on that I keep all my girl friendships separate from each other. I really only deal with dyads. And the reason I do this is because it eliminates the social status hierarchy among my friends that could develop where I end up not being the dominant female. So if I'm just dealing with another female, just one, and we're pretty much equal in status, or maybe I'm dominant. And this happens even in bonobos, which are actually considered to be the most egalitarian or cooperative of all the great apes. The dynamics of female relationships, which form the heart of a bonobo community, can be altered depending on whether or not the females are in pairs or in threes. And it turns out that how you compose your relationships with other females has a huge impact on how successful you are. So I guess I'm kind of like a bonobo that way.
Uh-oh. Please tell me you're not starting to masturbate in public. You have to explain that maybe for people.
Yeah, no, I definitely keep my masturbating private.
And that was a bonobo joke.
I know, and I know you say that because bonobos have a horny reputation, and they are often called the apes from Venus, and they don't really care about where they masturbate. And it is true that all that sex does help calm things down, especially among the females, but even for the males. I mean, imagine if every time you had a social conflict with a female or a male, you just rubbed one off. I mean, there would be so much. There would be so much less physical aggression. Okay, but seriously, I just want to mention that among women, there is always a risk that when you turn your dyad into a triad, you invite a third female in, your two friends could pair up and run away with each other, and or worse, they form an alliance and turn against you. A lot of the research in animals has focused on male alliances, and there is good cause for concern, though, when you move from 2 to 3. In chimpanzees, a pair can turn on their third friend, and suddenly you're friendless. And if you're a chimp, and you're in bad shape, basically, as a result. I don't know.
I was going to ask you because you need the other two. You know, because you're in the jungle and you need a banana.
Well,
sorry,
an alliance.
Concept of animals. Good point.
Those individuals that have friends and have alliances do better because they literally have friends who have their back. And so if you suddenly, like one of your friends who's been your supporter and you're in other fights with other chimps, abandons you and basically makes friends with a with another one, you now have lost that protection. And so, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one who's ever had a close girlfriend or two close girlfriends that I introduced, you know, run off with each other. I mean, I don't, have you ever had this happen to you?
No, as I was saying, my problem was actually more one of total social exclusion. I was a late bloomer in having friends. And luckily, when I got to be a teen, boys seemed not to notice all the cooties that were supposedly crawling all over me.
I'm sorry you were labeled as having cooties. But, you know, thank goodness males just don't care, right?
Right.
I should point out that stigmatizing someone is the ultimate form of social exclusion. But one of the major reasons females socially or totally, in your case, I'm sorry again, exclude other females, like in our not-so-friendly meerkats, is basically for the same purpose as why males compete. Us scientists call it competing for reproductive opportunities, which simply means we're fighting over a guy. And, you know, Jerry Springer aside, as we've already mentioned, we tend to go about it differently and less physically. And it's probably why the girls labeled you that way. You were just prettier.
I like to think of it that way. But once again, you know, you do have to appreciate, even if, you know, in the moment you don't, but that how guys are more direct, you know, hey, nice tits, you know, or off the construction site, you know, asking you out. But for women, competing, again, involves those covert tactics. So one of them is slut shaming, which in psychology is formally called derogation of competitors. I love how psychologists have to give everything a really boring name to make it sound smarter. So
exactly.
Derogation of competitors. This is women gossiping to other women about what a slut you are. You know, and they'll gossip to men too if they can, socially exclude you for it, tell tales, you know, everywhere they can, maybe true, maybe not, about your supposedly legendary promiscuity.
Yeah, and I have to say, us animal behaviors come up with fancy phrases as well to make it sound smarter. But
that's because they're all masturbating all the time. I mean, the animals, not the researchers. Well,
and
maybe
we have to say something about it, you know, like we have to call it something other than that. But yeah, to get back on track, right? Females target other females, particularly those that they find more attractive or that they think are more attractive. And, you know, gossiping or creating rumors about other females is a really effective strategy because it makes the victim, if you will, or target of the rumors less willing to compete. And it makes the one spreading the rumors actually more successful when it comes to dating. And I don't know that female animals spread lies or rumors about other females, but you never know because we recently discovered that dolphins gossip.
Dolphins gossip? I mean, how? Is that a little blowhole?
Yes, they do. And because each dolphin has a signature whistle and they have a signature name, basically. And so what researchers found is that two dolphins use the sound for a third dolphin who's not present, which means they have to be talking about the third dolphin. They're not calling the third dolphin to come over. We don't know what they're saying about the absent dolphin, but it could be like, oh my gosh, did you see, like, she was just sleeping with everybody. I mean, I don't know.
Well, this is depressing. I mean, the human stuff is depressing enough. Now I find it about dolphins. They were so cute and happy and, oh God. And I just want to say, you know, so these are evolved behaviors or reasons for them their adaptations. So back in ancestral times that women would be more likely to survive and mate and pass on their genes. But it doesn't mean that every woman now does practice them. And I want to explain, there's this confusion, you know, that what researchers find involves research saying like, yeah, do this. This is great. And this is called the is versus ought fallacy. So it's like what is, you know, what they find versus what ought to be. So it's like, they're not saying it should be this way. Joyce Benenson, she's kind of depressed at all the findings. Mm-hmm. Every time she does studies, you know, like, oh no, girls are like this. They're kind of rotten. I mean, she doesn't say that necessarily, right. But, you know, and an interesting thing too, to mention Joyce, I did a show with her and afterward we talked and I mentioned to her, you know, I mean, I understand this stuff and I'm a girl and everything, but I think I'm kind of an outlier. I'm more direct, I think, than many women. And she also feels that way. And knowing you, Dr. Jen, I suspect you are too, but But this can leave you vulnerable, you know, because if you aren't a big schemer, you know, you can forget to remember to guard yourself against the schemer, the rest of the schemers.
Absolutely. And I am definitely not a schemer. I think I'm with the two of you as an outlier. I'm not a schemer with females, and I'm not a schemer with males. And I, you know, it's true. It leaves you vulnerable. And one thing that can happen as, and is common among females, is mate poaching. And I think this ought, and is versus ought that you brought up is really interesting, because I think if we can't figure out why we have certain behaviors, we can't change them. And that's why I love looking at animals and even a lot of the human research. It points out where we need some work. And mate poaching is, or mate stealing, is something very common in animals and humans. And it's why the song originally by Sippy Wallace was "Woman Be Wise, Don't Advertise Your Man" is good advice. And this actually happened to a friend of mine, where her best friend basically stole her great boyfriend. And we could all say, oh, it's the guy's fault, but we know from the research that humans, both male and female, like many other species, have a tendency to copy the mate choice of others, right? So black grouse, which is a bird, the females do this. Like, the males are all out there doing, strutting their stuff, doing their thing, and the females are watching all of this. And a cheap and quick solution to finding a great male is, well, who did she pick? So a female figures, if another one evaluated a male and found him desirable, then he must be. And that's why a lot of the research on humans reveals that married men or men in relationships get hit on much more often than single guys. So I think one thing to remember is keep your girlfriends close to you, not your partner.
Oh, wait, close to you, not your partner. Oh, okay, I get what you're saying. I was thinking keep your partner far away from you. Okay, keep your girlfriends close to you, but don't let them get near your partner. Okay, now
yes,
I get it.
Yes, yes.
And this actually goes out with this feature in Women that I read in Joyce Benenson's work, which is that you're not supposed to stand out from the group. You're not supposed to do anything, have anything enviable. But I have to say, you know, here's a rule I break, this don't stand out thing. I wear, some of you may know, evening dress skirts as daywear. So some like taffeta mermaid skirt, you know, just the skirt. You can get them on eBay for like $10 because no one wears nice clothes anymore, you know, and then jeans jacket and fluffy scarf. So it's this high contrast to the style in LA, which is best described as something like, look like you can clean out someone's septic tank at any moment. Look ready, you know, as in the way you dress. So, but then I have to look and see, you know, I am part of social groups that are atypical. So it's not just like a bunch of girls. There are two social groups I'm part of, writers and then science people, and some of them intersperse. But in both groups, men and women are both judged more by their ability, you know, than like, oh, what kind of car do you drive and all those other things and how hot are you? I mean, the hot people still get more attention. But, you know, then again, I still do see shades of this, hey, girl, don't be standing out thing. You know, I walked into the press room at this conference, SPSP, which is, I always forget the initials. It's a big social psychology conference. And this other science journalist turns to me and she says, why, you're wearing a ball gown. And I don't think she meant that in a nice way. But I translated this with, from what I think was the intended, hey, feel like a freak, to beware that girl's got a set of fangs. So to cap that off, I just want to say that the science on female competition, yes, it's pretty depressing, but it's something you can interpret depending on your state of mind, how much power you have in your various social groups, which is often tied to how talented and accomplished you are.
Well, you know, I just have to say, I love how you decide to stand out anyway. And I'm the same way. Now, when it came to appearance, my signature was my high heels. So I went to, you know, scientists sometimes get a bad rap for their flip-flops and torn shorts, and not me. I dressed up and I wore my 4-inch heels. And I'll never forget that when we were on a retreat for work, I fell and I twisted my ankle and blew out my ankle. And one of the girls who came to help me said, oh, poor Dr. Jen, she can't wear her heels anymore.
Ooh.
As I was screaming and writhing in pain. So, you know, I think it was not intended in a nice way either. But ultimately, right, my abilities, as you said, your power in your social groups is tied to your abilities when it comes to science and writers. And I think you're right. But I like standing out. And we talked about how males like settle disputes much quicker and that females are much more strategically retaliatory, which I think makes its appearance in some of these, you brought it up in the beginning, these sort of covert remarks. So you never really know where you stand. And I think that one thing that can help is to pay attention to what happens in a group or when there is conflict, or even when I was in this situation, how someone responded to me was a clear indication of where I really stood with that person. And, you know, we can look at baboons for some advice here, because in baboons, females form alliances with each other. And whenever there's a dispute, you're basically your female baboon friend, and even your male baboon friend, because they make friends with males, always sides with you. They don't actually care if you're right. They just are there. They have your side, whether you're right or wrong.
I just realized my friend Kate Coe is my female baboon friend, but I don't think she'd really like it if I called her that.
It's a compliment. You know, it's a compliment.
Right. You have those friends. They just like, you know, like, Kate, you actually, before you tell her about somebody who's done something to you, you have to, you know, warn her six times that she's not allowed to go like burn their house down or something, because she's such a, she's a good friend. She'll be there for you, you know, and I think what you said, how somebody responds and whether they side with you, being an indication of where you stand, I think that's really wise thinking. But I want to talk a little bit about human-female bonding. And this is something that's very interesting, that women seem to bond through shared vulnerabilities. And this is from Joyce Benenson's work. She says that this is the single largest difference in friendships between women and women, and men and men. So women will discuss what she calls vulnerabilities in themselves, while men focus on, they focus more on shared activity. So vulnerability is like, oh, I'm not very pretty and I did this wrong and I, you know, got a flat tire. You know, none of this Master of the Universe stuff. And, you know, think about that. I tend to publicly laugh at myself and my foibles, but generally because it's, I don't know, maybe it's an evolutionary thing, but I find it more entertaining than being some full of myself gas bag, which I guess I could probably be too. But so the advice here, based on the research, is if you're a woman and you want to make women not feel threatened by you, you know, you want to take over the workplace, for example, you know, and the thing to do, you know, because you can be a schemer and do it in the science-based way. If you want women to not feel threatened, or you're looking for female friends, do a little test. You know, because this might be uncomfortable for you. Try the, wow, here are my fears, and gee, maybe I messed that up approach. So, you know, yes, and I have to say, that kind of makes me hurl. But, you know, if you're a woman in a situation where it's important to do well amongst other women, you know, use the science. Maybe that vulnerability thing is your way to keep the others from thinking you're an uppity broad that they should go after and bring down.
Well, and that could be a great strategy, but sometimes it can backfire, especially if the other females either don't think you're being sincere, or if they don't think you should feel vulnerable about that particular thing. So essentially, if you have gorgeous hair, don't say you're insecure about your hair. It'll just piss them off.
Okay, I think that was a humble brag about your hair hidden and available only to me. But okay, let's get back to the animal kingdom after. No, I had to snark. Okay, because it is about female competition. Ooh, we competed. Okay, first I'll lay out a few female human traits. See, I'm making you laugh so you can't talk. Competition. Anyway, okay, a few female human traits so we can see how animals compare. So I'm going to tell you what the researchers say about female competition, okay, and the ways women protect themselves socially. This is so interesting. Smiling. Women smile all the time compared to men. And this is apparently a way of reducing social tension. That's what they think anyway. And of resolving conflicts, you know, oh, you just, you know, stuck your stiletto heel into my foot. You know, oh, I'll just smile. That's okay. Meanwhile, you're thinking like, yeah, and I will, you know, come, you know, torch your car after work. And so the other thing too, oh, so girls, oh, I forgot this. Girls, it was in my notes. Girls smile more from birth onward. I mean, that's really interesting, because that infant research, it tells you more. You know, you can't say, oh, that's socialization if they're like three months or something like that. You know, they saw it on TV. And also there's another thing, forced politeness, you know, to force yourself to be polite. This works similarly to smiling, apparently, all about reducing the possibility of conflicts, physical conflicts, direct conflicts verbally, that sort of thing. So animal-wise, yeah. How's that play out?
Well, animal-wise, of course, depending on how you smile, it's actually a threat. So, but I will say this about going back to our baboons. Baboon friends don't smile, hang out with you, groom you, and then when it counts, throw you under the bus. Okay, so if this happens in your female friendships, I suggest you make some new friends. But, you know, so there, smiling is actually a threat in animals, so there isn't a good analog for that. But again, you know, they reduce tension by grooming, and those friendships are solid, and they will stand up for you when there's a conflict. But I think a lot of female conflict also happens at work, which I like to think of as competition for resources and status. And we mentioned this early in the show, and I think it's important to talk about that.
Yeah, I think so too. I just like the idea of grooming. Like, could I do that? Go over and try to pick a nit off you, and then, you know, we're okay. We're okay again. No more. You know, I never mind that I said that bad thing about your shoes. But I'm remembering. I promised to address what I see as bad advice by Sheryl Sandberg while we're talking about the workplace. She's the CEO of Facebook. She wrote a book called Lean In that sold more copies than there are like people in India. And this notion that women should lean in, which means like boldly assert yourself at the office. Well, you know, this often does not play well with other women or other men because, you know, remember the thing of women they're not supposed to stand out, and men co-evolved to expect women to quote unquote fight like women and not like men, to not be so direct. So, and I have an answer here. This is what I think. I think that a way around this notion that you're not supposed to stand out, that you're not supposed to be direct, is to go both ways. If you're a woman, go both ways. So be bold, but also be careful, you know, with women. And the way you do that is you build individual relationships, those dyads, with all the women of significance in their workplace, so they feel tended to, and you can tell them. See, remember the bonding over shared vulnerabilities. Tell them how you think you suck and you're worried, and then they can say like, oh, no. Of course, you should seem sincere, because if you're not, then they'll eat you for lunch.
Right. Well, absolutely, just like a hyena. And I can say that when it comes to hyenas, dominant females don't mind standing out against other females, and they will do whatever it takes to get ahead. And sometimes human females are just like this as well. So I think you're right. You have to be careful also who you choose to build those dyadic relationships with. But dominant females are not meek, and subordinate women and hyenas, on the other hand, are definitely at risk for retaliation if they stand out in a way that's not okay with a dominant individual. And we can see these dynamics often play out in the workplace. But I do think that even for all women, it can be dangerous for them to stand out among men, but actually for different reasons. I mean, it would be great to say, you know, that men don't really feel threatened by powerful women, but they are. And it brings unwanted male attention. And suddenly you're not just competing against other females, which you're competing against males, which relates to what you were saying about how men expect women to compete as women and with women, and not directly as directly as males or even against males.
Yeah, competing against males for women, it's something evolutionarily novel. This means a modern thing that's a bit of a mismatch with our genetic makeup. But you said something, you know, that men, what was the thing that it's dangerous for them to stand out amongst men, but for different reasons. Right. Why is that?
Well, I think because men actually feel threatened by powerful women. They there's an expectation that male status dominates females. So a female can be dominant over other females, but she can't be dominant over males.
Oh, and it kind of makes them itch. Like, it makes them itch. Like, wait, this isn't supposed to happen.
Yeah. And the only time we really see this in animals is when there's a role reversal and females are larger than males, or females have weaponry for fighting, and they'll fight against females as male, like basically fight in the same way as males against females. And so they're acting as males in those cases, and the strongest, toughest, most badass female wins, like dung beetles. As just a little aside, you know, without dung beetles, there would be a lot more shit around, okay? But so we should all thank the dung beetles. But one female dung beetle, I like her because it's Onthophagus sagittarius, and I'm a Sagittarius. She has huge horns, and the horns are even bigger than the male's horns. You know, so in that case, the female, it pays. She's evolved to fight like a male. But as you mentioned with humans, you know, these beetle chicks, they're not competing against males, or even for males in this case. They're fighting for resources or territory, but they're taking on the role of a male, but still competing within their own sex, or what we like to call, our fancy animal behavior scientists, intrasexual aggression. So, you know, I think, though, I would have to, you know, kind of depart a little bit and say that, you know, the females that do the best in the workplace are the ones that seem to compete the way males compete.
Well, I think it has to, I do think it has to be a mix, you know, that women have to tend to other women. And actually, you know, I think that maybe tend to other men that they tend to men. I think that this individual, this thing of making people feel okay on a one-on-one basis, I think that's a way around this. But, you know, I also noticed that men tend to give women low marks for this directness. So, I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I do think that men give women low marks, regardless, actually, of whichever strategy we use. But I do think that males can respect.
Except going topless. Going topless would get high marks.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, exactly. You know, but I think that they can respect an approach they can recognize. They may not want to date you, but they will work with you. I do think, though, we should mention what we mean by competing like men in the workplace and how we can translate that into actions for us females.
Well, the thing is, I think more and more that the world is set up for entrepreneurs, especially female entrepreneurs. So, you know, the sex differences in that light, you know, where you're not supposed to stand out. And if you do, men damn you, women damn you, all this other stuff. Standing out is what an entrepreneur is about. So the sex differences look a lot less depressing in that light. So, you know, because if you look at it, many of these problems, these are social stumbling blocks. So these are problems within a group of women, a group of people in a workplace. But if you're going off to please a single client, many of these social issues disappear. They just, you know, like, wow, that's a great graphic design, you know, and they're fine with it. And you're not competing with them for status. You are the one who's making them look good with your design or whatever you're providing them.
Yeah, and that is actually one of the reasons why I prefer not working in office environments.
Also, they do have those soul-killing fluorescent lights. And
yeah.
And speaking of, you know, the time worked, I'm just thinking, sorry, 9 to 5, I made a little leap there. We are running out of show time. And for any of you who are women who are now thinking of exiling yourself from womankind, not so fast. Wait. Yes, some of this sounds pretty depressing, but I think it's really important to remember that knowledge is power and that there are plenty of outliers. I'm one of them. Dr. Jen's one of them. These other women we mentioned are outliers. And so you can see this information as something that helps you inform your choices and your power grabs, if any. So that's almost the end of our show. This is Amy Alcon, and you've been listening to Science News You Can Use Radio with Amy Alcon and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin. Please support our work by buying our new books, Amy Alcon's Good Manners for Nice People Who Sometimes Say Fuck, and Dr. Jennifer Vertelin's Wild Connection, What Animal Courtship and Mating Tell Us About Human Relationships. Dr. Jen, any final fabulous words from the animal kingdom?
Always. You know, if you're a woman, you should keep an eye out for the retaliatory hyena types and try to find some female colleagues and friends who are solid like baboons. Even better if they look a little bit like baboons.
I like that.